Greetings, everyone. Thank you all for joining us this evening on our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle. It's August 17th, 2017, Thursday evening. And what a world we live in. Lots been happening in the last month. And I'm delighted that we are able to join together on this telephone conference call and have a discussion about any issues or questions or concerns that may be coming up for you in your vegan advocacy or in your vegan living. And this is a private kind of safe space, basically, for people who are World Peace Diet facilitators going through the training or in the World Peace Diet circle. And it's just really, wide open. It's a wonderful opportunity to share ideas with each other. There's a few things I want to talk about, and I'd also like to open it up. If you have any questions, press star 6 if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to make at any point along the way. So it's just about just a little after 6 o'clock, and usually we like to begin our time with just a very brief connection time. So let's do that now, and then we can dive in to some of the ideas and concepts and issues that perhaps are concerning us this month. So if you're if you're driving or whatever, keep your eyes wide open. But otherwise, feel free to turn your attention within. And let's just take a moment as we feel our connection with the Earth, this beautiful planet, abundance, magnificent web of life here, the life that supports all life, the energy that supports all of the celebration here, the loving, nurturing power of the Earth, and feeling our connection also with heaven and all that heaven represents. Creative power of the universe, and feeling ourselves poised between heaven and earth and partaking of both. We give thanks for all expressions of life here on this earth and for all of the efforts that are being made by other people, by ourselves and each other, to help bring our lives into alignment with our values and to focus our attention on self-transformation so that we can more authentically and skillfully be agents of positive change and awakening here and healing, and that we can also heal the wounds that we also ourselves have endured. We give thanks for these efforts that are being made by countless other people, not only in the country wherever we're living, but throughout the world, and those who have gone before us and those who will come after us, knowing that we're part of a much larger movement of human consciousness to not only awaken, but to return to the roots of our wisdom, to come home to the peace and harmony and freedom and joy and abundance of living that are our true nature. We give thanks for all the animals who are living and celebrating their lives as best they can, for their endurance of countless atrocities at human hands. We give thanks for the awakening hearts that are now more and more turning toward kindness and love and respect, saying no to violence and abuse of other human beings and animals and ecosystems, and cultivating a questioning attitude of how we can live our lives as expressions of love and peace and caring. So we give thanks knowing that we're part of an awakening on this earth, the benefit of all beings of the past, present, and future. And we give thanks knowing that whatever the outer appearances may be, that we have an opportunity each and every day to contribute not only to our own healing and awakening, but to the healing and awakening of our world and those around us. And so it is. All right. Well, bless you all, and thanks again for all your efforts over the past month. I know it's been quite a month. Seems like we have, in some ways, we're sliding backward to society in terms of war and social justice issues and so forth. I think there's a lot of progress being made as well, but that, you know, that could be true. It's really hard to ever know, I guess, ultimately, whether we're making progress, or whether we're progressing or regressing. I remember going out in my younger years, I used to say, I don't know whether we're progressing or regressing. I guess we're just gressing. Regressing along somewhere. I'm not sure if it's forward or backward or sideways or upside down or inside out. We're moving. And it seems like in some ways it's definitely getting better for animals. If you look at the resources for August 2017 that I put together this month, it's one of the biggest ever. I mean, there's like four pages. And there's a lot of great things happening, a lot of positive developments, but also a lot of apparently, you know, worse things happening. I think the vegan message is definitely becoming more and more mainstream, which of course is the whole idea that we are discussing this more, and even people who have never heard of veganism, at least nowadays, have heard of it, and they're forced in some way to address it in their personal lives. And I know that a lot of you are helping directly and indirectly by your conversations, by what you're writing, by your projects. And all of these things, I think, are helpful. I think anything we can do, actually, that can help bring the vegan message to other people is helpful. Whether they respond how we want them to or not, I think, is less important. And I think that's one of the key issues for us to be working with today in the light of what's been happening, you know, in Charlottesville and what's been happening, in terms of our relationship with Russia and China and North Korea and Europe and, you know, all these Africa, South America, Venezuela. I mean, there's so many. I mean, there always have been. Syria. There's enormous problems in the way we're relating to each other as countries and as individuals. But to I think really remember that it's not about winning or changing other people, even though we want that. You know, the narrow mind that we all probably have to some degree is wants everything to other people to change, and we want to be the ones to help change them, and we want to sort of win the battle against the forces of darkness and fight against them in a sense and be more skillful than they are and outwit them at every turn. And what I realize more and more is that whole way of thinking is part of the herding mentality. It's, we're still within the basic matrix of domination and exploitation of animals, because we're thinking in terms of dualism and separation and our developing our power so that we can be victorious over others. And I heard Paul Watson speak the other day on an interview. He's a co-founder, or the founder, actually, of Sea Shepherd Society. And he said something that I resonated with me, because I feel the same way, actually, in a lot of ways. He was talking about how when he was a young guy, you know, just in his early 20s or late teens or something, he was very concerned about the treatment of the Native American Indians, and he went way back. I remember when this happened, to Wounded Knee. There was an uprising of American Indian people at Wounded Knee, and I think that's in South Dakota. And the federal troops were there, the military was there, and the Indians were there, and Paul Watson and a lot of other, you know, young people were there to support the Indians. And he was appalled, really, at how the Indians were really not armed to speak of. The military was armed and was willing to use their weapons, and what an unfair fight it was, really, in the situation. It looked pretty hopeless, and he was able, actually, to go into the tent of Russell Means, who was kind of running the whole thing. He was one of the elders for the American Indians, and he said, what's the plan here? I mean, we're completely outnumbered. They have more weapons than we do, and I don't see any way we can win this. And Russell Means says, the point is not winning. He said, then why are we here? And he said, because it's the right thing to do. And I think that's really the message, essentially, in many ways. It's the right thing to do. I mean, we have our life. We have, you've probably heard me say this before, we have a few years, not that many, a few days, not that many. And at some point, it'll be over. We don't know when. It could be soon. So at that moment when we're leaving our bodies, we are going to be, all of us, obviously, facing the question of how did we spend our time while we were here, and did we spend it wisely? Did we spend it the way we wish we had spent our time? And I think that's the key thing, is that we're really not here necessarily to dominate, or not, I shouldn't say dominate, but to defeat and be victorious. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what that actually is. When sometimes when we think we've won, we've lost. Sometimes when we think we've lost, we've won. And I've seen that many times, actually, in my own advocacy movement. Sometimes people, you know, they respond really well to what I'm saying, and I think, oh, that was great. And I found out later it didn't change them at all. You know, it didn't seem to anyway. And other times people really react, you know, and they respond not the way I wanted them to respond at all. And it looks like I really failed in that interaction. And later I found out that, you know, they went vegan. And so I think, you know, we don't know. We never know, actually, you know, what the result is. And so the key, I think, is not to be, as the old saying is in the Bhagavad Gita and Buddhist and Hindu and many of the Taoist and these wisdom traditions, is to be less concerned about the fruits of our actions and to just do the best we can to live in integrity with our own values and to express ourselves in alignment with those values. And that's why I think respect is so important in the vegan message, because it's a message and a movement of respect. And if we're not being respectful, if we're trying to change people, people feel it. You know, I don't want someone coming into my life and trying to change me, that I'm somehow wrong and they're better and they're going to try to, you know, change me or save me or whatever it is. You know, I'm naturally going to resist. I think we all have that tendency. So, you know, the whole idea here, I think, is to share the ideas and to plant seeds. And we plant seeds by being caring and loving, if we want to have a more caring and loving world, and listening to other people and sharing our experience, and then being willing to hear their experience and then letting go, just letting go. And it's very freeing. I think when we let go, we can avoid a lot of the burnout that we see happening in our movement. People get, you know, try to be victorious and feel like they're not making enough progress, and then pretty soon they give up and go on to other things. And I think that's not going to happen to us when our practice of veganism and our advocacy are rooted in a deeper awareness that we have a life that is evolving and that we're on a journey of awakening, and this is just part of our life that we're engaged in. So that is the message that I've been feeling more and more, and I'm working on an essay, which I should have out finished in a couple of days, on the six paramitas, which are the six perfections, sometimes it's called in the Buddhist tradition. And the whole idea is that if we cultivate these dimensions of consciousness, we'll be more likely to attain liberation ourselves and also be more likely to help others around us become more liberated as well. And so paramita literally means crossing to the other shore, something like that, or it's a vehicle for crossing, paramita, crossing over, and that's the idea. So these are six attitudes for crossing over, crossing the shore, crossing the ocean of samsara, which is conditioned existence or delusion. And really, I think the whole vegan movement is about overcoming the delusion of herderism, the fundamental delusion of the society that we were born into, which was also injected into us from infancy, that we're essentially separate from nature, separate from each other, separate from animals, that we need to compete and fight for what we want to get, and that happiness comes from consuming goods or being able to, in a sense, be victorious or to win in the competition for partners and for fame and for products and things, this whole idea. So that's very deeply embedded, and it just comes right out of herderism, which is the mentality of dominating and exploiting animals for food and owning them as objects and commodifying life and disconnecting from the sacred feminine dimension of consciousness, which looks with eyes that sees others as beings and not as things. And you could not have a capitalist society, especially the kind we have today, with the sacred feminine dimension functioning. And so I think the ancient wisdom traditions that we see still speaking to us through many of the world's religions are reminders to question the official stories in our society. And the six paramitas, I think, is one of many teachings that helps us to cross the shore, cross the ocean to the other shore of awakening. And the ocean is basically samsara, which is the delusion that we're all born into and that functions in our consciousness, that we are essentially a thing. We're an object that was born and will die, and that we are separate from other objects who were born and will die, that we're all objects who are things. This is just absolutely injected into us with every science class, with every class of any kind, the materialist point of view, and that animals, of course, are just pieces of meat and here to be used, they're just objects. And this materialism really gets its roots into us at a very deep level, and also the idea, which I think needs to be questioned, that we have evolved out of very primitive back beginnings, that we were in the past, if you go back like to the pre-herding culture, that we were just living, you know, eating meat, slaughtering animals, wearing furs, kind of brutes that were just living a very brutal life. And I think there's a lot of evidence that there was perhaps many civilizations before ours that were more advanced than we are in many ways. Maybe not technically. I mean, it was interesting when I went to Switzerland years ago. I had some time by myself. Melanie was with her mother, and I went to this steam park. I should look it up. It was put on by this guy who's written quite a few books. I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, he about the unexplained phenomena on planet Earth, the pyramids, and a whole lot of different things. And he spent 2 days there, you know, just going into all these things, crop circles, and so many different things. You know, and how the pyramids, for example, there's no way today we could ever build the pyramids. We do not have anywhere near the technology to build the pyramids, and that is well understood. And a Japanese team, you know, made an effort to see if it was possible for any human corporation or government or whatever to replicate the pyramids, and they said it's absolutely beyond any technological capacity that we have today to do such a thing, and there's quite a few things like that. So I think, we have to have a little humility, and this the arrogance, I think, that really sort of is bred into us, not only that we're superior to animals, but that we're superior to all of our ancestors. That they were brutal and deluded and violent and so forth. And we're getting better and better. I think it's, you know, the idea of getting better is certainly good, but the idea that that we're so superior, I think that's a very interesting thing, because if people understood that if you go back, you know, in earlier times or to other less industrialized nations, that people are actually very happy, they had plenty of time, it wasn't difficult to get enough food, and that they lived their lives with grace and joy and happiness and harmony together, you know, that would be extremely disruptive to, you know, the people say, well, why am I living like a slave now and working in a job that I don't like and struggling to get enough money to buy, get enough food? And so I think it's important for us to realize that these ancient wisdom traditions come from, you know, like in the Tao Te Ching, there's this great saying by Lao Tzu, it's in there, that when life was full, and people lived in harmony with their true nature, they made no history. You know, this basic idea that we don't really know. People didn't feel the need to write things down in a way to tell their story for future generations, because they were much more awake. And that this many of the sicknesses that we have, the psychological sicknesses, come from herderism. The basic insecurity that we have deep within us that comes from horribly abusing animals and eating their flesh, and knowing that this is absolutely contrary to our true nature, and creating whole massive civilizations based on a technology that divorces us more and more from the earth and from nature, from our connection with the beauty of life, as we pollute and destroy in ever-increasing rapidity the life that we have here. So I think these ancient teachings can help us remember, and I think it's really, you know, maybe time for us to do what we can to bring our lives on every level into more alignment with how people lived in earlier times. And that, in a plant-based, obviously plant-based way. So anyway, getting back to the six paramitas, this is an ancient teaching, goes back thousands of years, and the idea is that if we want to cross the ocean of delusion to the other side, there are these six qualities of consciousness that we can cultivate. And so I'll just say them briefly, and I think they all come in handy. First one is dana, which means generosity. And the basic idea here is that giving has many levels. I say this, I go through it every day. I say one of them. I've been doing this now for probably 40 years. So what I say on Monday is, Monday, the day of giving, Dana Paramita, let us have all-pervading love, not only for people, but for all sentient beings, and give of ourselves and our possessions freely and without regret, the heart of loving kindness. May our giving be rooted in transcending awareness, knowing the three elements involved are of one essence. Finally, let us remember that the teachings contain no greater wisdom than the wisdom of letting go. This is also called dana. So that's what I say every Monday. And I think the idea here is to remember to give, and to remember to be generous, not only to people, but to animals, and to future generations, and to the earth, and to give back, and not be a taker, not always taking. And to remember that the three elements involved are of one essence, which basically is referring to the idea that the giver and the gift and the receiver are not fundamentally separated. It looks like there's a subject and object, someone who's giving, someone who's receiving, and that there's this thing being given, whatever it is, but actually, from a higher perspective, that it's one essence, actually, that, and the receiver is also giving, and the giver is also receiving, and the gift is also giving and receiving, so everything is connected at a much deeper level, and to make an effort to understand this in our daily lives. And then that other idea, there is no greater wisdom than the wisdom of letting go, and this is also called dana. In other words, when we let go, that's a form of generosity, just letting go of our clinging to how we want things to be or how we want other people to be. And it's free. Not only frees them, it frees us. And people, I've noticed the irony is that people are much more likely to change if I'm not trying to change them. If I'm trying to change them, then, you know, sort of marketing it to them, and then I become basically a manipulator. And I think, you know, we don't want to live our lives just being manipulators. We want to live our lives as, you know, planting seeds, of course, but authentically and speaking our truth. So that's the first one. Second one is Shila, which means typically means ethics or morality. And that whole idea is to just understand that there's a way of living that's in harmony with the universal values that come from the understanding the interconnectedness of all life. So that one is Tuesday, the day of ethics, Shila Paramita. Let us maintain standards of discipline, etiquette, and decorum so that our actions are honorable in every situation, and thinking of others always, let us be careful not to harm them in any way. Let us cultivate the natural integrity, diligence, and straightforwardness, which are fundamental aspects of clear seeing and real virtue. You know, so the basic underlying idea is that we have within ourselves an internal guidance system, our own intuition that can guide us to live our lives in a way that we're not harming others, and that this really is the foundation not only of happiness in our society, but happiness for ourselves as well. So all of the so-called, you know, positive or good actions really come from a deeper awareness that we're not fundamentally separate from others, and that we're interconnected in a way that if I harm them, then I'm doing things that are going to hurt me as well. And if we had this kind of practice, if we practice in this way, we wouldn't have obviously the kinds of things happening that we're doing to animals, or the kinds of wars, the kinds of things we see in Charlottesville, you know, all these things would not be happening. So if we want to change the outer world without doing the internal practice, then we're being merely, as I say in the book, we're being merely ironic in our actions. We want for ourselves what we refuse to practice in our own lives and give to others. So that's the second one. The third one is patience. Shanti Paramita. And this is an interesting one. I think, you know, patience seems like it's one of those things like humility in a way. It's like the more I think I'm being patient, I'm probably the more impatient I actually am. If I think I'm being patient, then I'm probably not patient. If I think I'm being humble, then I'm probably not that humble. Because, you know, patience is like humility in the sense that it's not something that the ego can ever have as a quality. The ego essentially is impatient. You know, it wants change. It wants others to do what it wants them to do now. It doesn't. It's trying to always escape the present moment. So I think that, you know, patience is very profound. There's in some teachings it is like the absolute utter essence of the infinite wisdom of the universe is patience. And if we perhaps really understood what patience is all about, we could see much more deeply into the wisdom of our true nature. It goes, let us, I'll say the whole thing. So Wednesday, the day of patience, Shanti Paramita, let us treat all beings as the Buddha, seeing through the spell of appearance to the essential reality in which there is fundamentally no individual. Let us remember that patience is humility, a basic acceptance of this present unfoldment. Of this present moment is the perfect unfoldment of life and love, and that it is also an accurate mirror of our present state of mind, and thus continuously bears great opportunities to grow in wisdom and compassion. So that, again, that's kind of a mouthful, but again, the basic idea is that patience is related to humility and looking beyond the outer appearance to seeing seeing every being as the Buddha, in other words, seeing every being as an eternal expression of consciousness. And I think when we do that, we help liberate others instead of seeing someone as, oh, that guy's a real jerk, he's he's never going to be a vegan. You have to see there's a light in that person, and it's receptive to the light of kindness and caring, because that's the true nature of all of us. And I think as we learn to look with those kinds of eyes, we tend to help others open to what is more beneficial and more true to them. And also to realize, I mean, that last part is kind of challenging, but to realize that whatever the present moment is, it's a mirror of our present state of mind. So instead of trying to change the outer situation directly, I mean, that's not to say we don't respond to what's happening in the world, in the outer world, but to realize that there's something within us that is projecting what we're seeing or experiencing, and to work on that. If we work on that, we have a lot more, I think, real empowerment to positively heal and understand the situations that are arising in our lives. So that's the third one. The fourth one is the Thursday is Virya Paramita, which is energy or diligence, I guess is what you could say. So the way it goes, Thursday, the day of zealous effort. Virya Paramita. Whatever is appropriate, let us perform it diligently and persistently push forward. Let us be aware of the source of all energy and activity and live in harmony with it. So that's the fourth one on Thursday. The idea is zealous effort to realize, you know, like with patience, it sounds like everything, we just kind of don't have to do anything, we just relax somehow. But the whole idea with this is to remind us that our life is really about making an effort, and there's no way to avoid that. Everything takes an effort to grow, to learn, to share, to understand, to help bless the world. You know, it's all, it does take an effort. And so there's this constant interplay between making an effort and also being open and to feedback. So because we can be making an effort and not necessarily helping anyone. There's that old, you've maybe heard me say the old saying from the Buddhist tradition about compassion, that without wisdom, our efforts will be misguided. So it's important to make efforts, but we also need to cultivate our wisdom. The image or the metaphor is the metaphor of the monkey and the who sees a fish down in the water and makes a great effort and climbs all the way down the tree, dives into the water, gets the fish, brings the fish out to the safety of the tree, and you know, what a work that was. But has he really made? You know, has he really helped the fish with all that effort? So that's, I guess, the question to be aware of. And you know, it's important to make effort, but also to have wisdom. So the final, okay, so we're almost done here. The fifth one is Friday, you know, we say it on Friday, I do anyway, the day of stillness and stability of mind. This is Dhyana Paramita. Dhyana is the ancient Sanskrit word that the Chinese couldn't say Dhyana, they said Chana, and then they shortened it to Chan, and the Japanese couldn't say Chan, they said Zen. So actually, when we talk about Zen, we're actually talking about Dhyana. Paramita, which literally means meditation, which is a mind which is not divided into self and other and past and future. And so Friday, the day of stillness and stability of mind, Dhyana Paramita, let us function in tranquil one-pointedness of mind, free from agitation arising through the senses and dualistic conceptions of this and that, self and other. Let us let go of tension and separateness and realize the equanimity which is born of awakening to the truth underlying phenomena. So that's Friday, Dhyana. And so the whole idea here, again, is to work with our mind. Our thoughts. Our thoughts create our reality. Our thoughts create our feelings. Our feelings create our actions. Our actions create our habits. Our habits create our character. Our character creates our destiny. It goes back to the moment-to-moment thoughts that we're entertaining, that we're allowing, and that we're acting on, and so very, really intimately work with our consciousness and become aware of how our thoughts arise and learn to bring our consciousness into a place where we're not at the effect of thoughts, but we're just prior to the thoughts. So we can have thoughts and feelings coming up. We realize that that's not who we are. We are the space within which they emerge and to which they will return again. There's enormous liberation when we engage in this practice, because when we do that, we begin to see our own actions and thoughts and feelings in a larger context, and that we're essentially free of that. We can see the programming. Instead of being the programming, we can see it functioning in the larger context of our own awareness. So we become more of a witness to what's happening rather than having the claw. My old Zen teacher used to say the fish hooks of life kind of grab into our flesh and pull us, and we can't get them out, you know, because we're reacting. And so meditation, I think, is foundational to all of these. They all interconnect and support each other. The six paramitas. Then the final one, the sixth one, is prajna paramita. Prajna means wisdom. So this is sort of the crown jewel of the whole thing. And Saturday is the day of wisdom, prajna paramita. Let us act so that the mind is always pure and bright, and behave so that we are never uncertain about the rightness of our actions. By the brightness of inherent wisdom, let us dispel the delusion of separateness and greed and hatred which spring from ignorance about the real nature of sense objects. So that's Saturday. And the whole idea is that we're being called to, in a sense, a really transcendent understanding where our mind is no longer being trapped by reacting through greed and hatred, which is basically, you know, wanting more, or rejecting and not wanting something, pushing something away, pulling something. This whole push and pull in our lives are basically driven by pushing and pulling, wanting this, not wanting that, wanting them to do this, don't want them to do that, don't do that, I don't want to do this, I want to do that, I hope I don't do this, I hope I do that, you know, that whole thing. So the whole idea of wisdom is to awaken out of that delusion and realize the true nature of sense objects, that they're arising in our consciousness. They don't have any fundamental reality outside of our experience of them, in the sense that they're not fundamentally, I mean, not to say that other beings aren't real, but that the way we perceive them is not exactly how it is, is not how it is. There's an old saying, which actually is from the Western philosophical tradition, things are not what they seem to be. And I think that basic idea to question appearances on every level, in our own lives and what we're reading in the media and everything, what people tell us, keep questioning. Don't ever, for me, not to ever feel like I've got the final answer. I think veganism, we have to understand, veganism is not a destination. It's not like, now I'm a vegan. Whew, life is over. I'm done. I'm perfect. Everything's nothing left to do. You know, veganism is a journey, and the journey is never ending. Really, I don't think it ever ends. I mean, life never ends. We go on with everything. That's what eternity is. Joseph Campbell was very specific about this. You know, he said eternity is not some infinite time. Eternity is this moment, which is always this moment. And so I think this is the underlying idea, is to realize that what we are is not something that can be categorized. What animals are, what life is, cannot be categorized and contained into some kind of concrete concept. And to liberate ourselves, you know, in this journey of understanding that never ends, more and more, so that we are forever more able to shine the light of loving kindness and wisdom to our world. So those are the six paramitas. On Sunday, I always say the seventh day, Sunday, the day of service. So the idea that service is the putting into practice of the six paramitas. So Sunday is the day of service. simultaneous practice of all the paramitas. Let us put all forms of wholesome action into practice by rendering service to others and practicing generosity, loving speech, beneficial action, and cooperativeness. May loving kindness and compassion emanate from every thought, word, and deed, and bless all sentient beings. And may they all realize the original brightness of their mind and be instantly reborn in the pure land of clear seeing. So that's Sunday, the day of service, and the idea is to try to be aware of all of them and live our lives with generosity and cooperativeness and in a mind and heart of blessing others rather than trying to take advantage of the situation for my own benefit. And I think, again, we go around and around the weeks, we go around and around in our lives. We have an opportunity every day to grow and learn and practice these teachings. And I think that's really the foundation of a vegan movement that will be successful, that it's about transforming ourselves so that we can be agents worthy of what veganism is, right, or of what ahimsa is. I mean, ahimsa is probably, in a way, a better word than vegan. I mean, it's not better, but it's a word that's just nonviolence. The idea is to just live our lives with kindness and respect for others, including our food, our buying options, our words and actions, and that as we do that, we create a field of freedom that can bless others. It was interesting, I didn't get it into the resources this week, but I have it in the resources, excuse me, this month. I have it in the resources next month, but I saw this beautiful article about a man who's a black man who's made it his mission in life to, he's a former, or I guess maybe even current, blues musician. He's kind of up in his, I guess, years. I mean, he's in the 60s, I guess. But to go to members of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, these white males, and befriend them, to make friends with them, and to get to know them, and to talk to them, and to have dinner with them, and to talk to them, and to really, with interest and with respect, to find out what it is that they're trying to accomplish and why they don't like people like him who's black. And he said that that's all he's tried to do. He's never tried to change anyone. He's never tried to make anyone not be a Ku Klux Klan member. He's just gone to them to be a friend, just to be friends with them and to find out how he can be of service to them and help them and understand them. And he said that it's been a really amazing experience that he's found that as he's done this, that he gets phone calls from people who are Ku Klux Klan members, and they say, you know, you've done something to me. I don't really feel like doing this anymore. And he says, well, you know, okay, it's up to you. And he now has a large collection of Ku Klux Klan robes and badges and shields and hoods and all these things that people send him. His closet, he said, is full of them. That hundreds of people have left the Ku Klux Klan just because he took time to become friends. And he never was trying to do that. He wasn't trying to get anybody to stop being a Ku Klux Klan member. And it just made me realize, you know, that, you know, we have this thing in Charlottesville where we have people on one side saying something that they think how it is, and that people on the other side hate them for saying that, and they say that, and then they hate them for saying that, and they just react and create violence. And people dig in even deeper into their set beliefs. And it's a recipe for utter disaster. You know, the whole idea is if someone would sit down and listen in a respectful way, we can do that, and we can be a force for healing. That the old saying, the old story, I remember when I was in school, that there was a competition between the wind and the sun to see who was stronger. And I remember it was a great story. Then, so they were arguing. The wind said, "I'm stronger." The sun said, "No, no, I'm stronger." So they said, "Okay, we're going to have a contest here." And they saw a man walking on a road, you know, down on the earth below them. And the wind said, "I'll show you who's stronger. Let's see which one of us can make that man lose his cloak." And so the leaving on the road. or have it, you know, take it away from him, take the cloak away from him. And so the wind came down and just howled around the man with an incredible fury, and just the wind grabbed that cloak and just ripped it away from him. But the man wanted to keep his cloak. He did not want to have it ripped away. And so the harder the wind blew, the tighter he grabbed and hung on to it. And so finally, the wind gave up. He was blowing the man all over the place, but the man just hung onto his cloak no matter what. And then the sun said, okay, now let me have a try here. And so the sun came out and just started shining really brightly. And the man's walking along. He's carrying this cloak. And it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And finally, the man just leaves the cloak on the road. I'm not going to carry this dang thing anymore. The sun leaves it there. You know, I think in a way that represents the kind of warmth that we can radiate in our activism will help people to just voluntarily relinquish their whatever it is that is holding them back, rather than us saying we're going to take it away from you because it's wrong for you to think that way. And so that's, I think, a foundational teaching that I've been thinking about quite a bit in relationship to some of what the cultural dialogue is going on here lately, and how everything fits together in the bigger scheme of things. So that's all I want to say. I kind of rambled on here for 45 minutes. And so please press *6 if you have any comments, questions, or thoughts. I have a few more things I do want to mention, but I don't want to have it just be a monologue. I'm happy to hear your thoughts. There's quite a few people here on the call. So if you have anything you'd like me to address, let me know. I do have from a couple of people had asked me ahead of time to address specific things. So maybe I'll go ahead and do that right now, since I don't see anybody pressing *6. I believe *6 is the right thing. I hope I'm saying the right thing here. So the first one was Grace. She was sent me an email and wondered if I could talk a little bit about teachings that are quite popular among certain circles. Guy McPherson, who is talking about the near-term extinction of human beings and probably a lot of life here on planet Earth, caused by global climate destabilizations, global warming, basically, and how to deal with that. I would just say, if you're familiar, I don't know if you're familiar with Guy McPherson's work. He's a former, I think, geography professor in Arizona who is, I think he's got a website called Nature Bats Last, and he gives a lot of lectures and interviews saying that no matter what we do, it's already gone too far. Global climate destabilization and global warming are going to go unavoidable. And within 10 years, humanity will be extinct. There will be no human beings on planet Earth because the methane is being released in the Arctic so quickly, and it is much more powerful of a greenhouse gas than anything else. And so these feedback loops is something, I don't know, he says it's 20 or 30 or maybe more now, feedback loops that are going to keep accelerating this process of global warming, that that the plants are going to die, there's going to be no food, that human beings will die, most animals will die, birds, fish will all die, everything's going to die, basically because of industrial civilization. Industrial civilization is a heat machine and has just heated everything up, and it's unavoidable no matter what we do. That's it. He also has very little patience for vegans. He thinks vegans are trying to change people and are extremists. And he has said very clearly that he has nothing's going to change his mind about that. And I'm kind of personally not that interested myself actually in Guy McPherson's theories. I don't think he's right, probably. I mean, I know there's a lot of scientific evidence that he's right, maybe, about this. But I think there's also a lot of scientific evidence that there's other things going on as well. So I have a definitely a healthy, I don't know if it's healthy, but I have a skepticism, maybe it's an unhealthy skepticism. But anyway, I have a lot of skepticism for his ideas. There's a lot of scientists saying completely different things. So I would say that the whatever human beings are doing really doesn't make much difference at all. That the sun itself, solar flares, the sun has been heating up, and there's a lot of scientific data backing this up, and that's the reason temperatures have risen, and that it's at the end of that cycle now. So it's, things are going historically anyway. So things are going to be cooling down again. And it's not a human thing. I mean, there are really a lot of different theories, and from my point of view, science is very primitive. It's really, we give way, from my point of view, a lot too much credence to these scientists. They're, It's a long, I can talk a long time about this, but basically just reading Thomas Kuhn's book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, which he wrote back in the 1950s, where he talks about how science does not progress in the, as we're taught, and, like this grand path of becoming more and more wise and so forth. It's really just a series of revolutions and changes of what Kuhn termed paradigms. And I think a lot of what we think today is so wise, we'll look back in the future and think how ridiculous our, we think our wisdom actually is. So anyway, I really wouldn't worry too much about Guy McPherson. Personally, I don't give him much credence, especially considering his anti-vegan statements, and also there's so many other theories being thrown around that we don't know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, we just really don't know at this point. So I think, he advocates just grace. It's like we're going to die, and when we understand that, then just be gracious, live and be loving and kind, and just spend the last few years of our humanity's time together in peace. And that's a nice message, I think we should do that anyway, whether we're going to die or not. I mean, that's what the that was the other thing that Russell Mean said to Paul Paul Watson. When he said that we're doing this because it's the right thing to do, and then he said the other thing he said was, and it's a good day to die. That's an old Indian saying, I think, but it's a good day to die. In other words, today could be the last day, and it's a good day. Every day is a good day to die. Every day is a good day to let go. We lived our life well. We're complete. We've done the best we could up to this point, and we're ready to go. And so I think if we live every day the best we can, and only we know that in our own heart, no one else can tell us, no one else can judge us, then I think we have that feeling that we're ready to go to the next experience, whatever that is. So I hope that's helpful, because I think it can be sort of a real downer to have to carry around this idea that everything's going to be destroyed no matter what we do, and any effort we make is meaningless, because that, I think, is incorrect. And in any event, I think as we human beings move toward a more vegan way of living and unleash our creativity and joy and understanding and wisdom and compassion and all the paramitas, basically, we will be able to transform the way we're living. And who knows how the earth and whatever forces are here will respond to our positive transformation. I think if we continue being on this planet a force of devastation and misery and violence for animals and ecosystems and each other, then how can we consider ourselves to be worthy to be living here? We're clearly counterproductive to the whole thing. I mean, so to do the best we can to be part of the solution every day is a beautiful way to live each day, and all we have is each day. So so that's my response to your question, Grace. I hope that's helpful. And I noticed that I have two people now that have raised their hands, and there's a few other people that have questions, but I'll go ahead and respond to these maybe quickly, and then I'll answer the other questions that I have that have come in. Maybe I'll mention this one also. Okay, there's another one from a person named Paul, who's not actually not in our circle, but he loves the World Peace Diet, and he wants to become more of an activist. And he wrote to me, and I think there may be a number of people like this, and he said that he would like me to recommend to him someone who could be a vegan coach, a health coach, and or a life coach. So I'm just putting this out to you. If you are a person who you, because you're a World Peace Diet facilitators, if you feel that you're someone who would like to, for me to refer people like Paul to you, then let me know. Because I, you know, quite honestly, I don't really want to just pick somebody on my own. I'd like to have one of you tell me that you would like to be a coach for Paul and people like Paul. So just send me an email, worldtitle@earthlink.net, if you feel like you have enough understanding of vegan nutrition and vegan lifestyle issues and things to be a coach. And, you know, I'm assuming he's talking about paying someone to help him to be a mentor and to be a coach. And I think it's a good idea. You know, we have people who really want to grow as vegans and who also want to have the World Peace Diet dimension of veganism be functioning actively in their life, and so they want to have a coach who's a World Peace Diet facilitator. So please let me know if you'd like me to give him your email address, and he can contact you. Okay, so that's that. All right, so I'll go ahead and Grace has raised her hand. So I'll go ahead, Grace, let me know if I answered your question okay or not. I think I unmuted you, did I? Okay, good.
Yeah, can you hear me, Will?
I can, yes, hi.
Excellent, thank you so much. I had a little bit of technical difficulties earlier in the call. I am, you're on speakerphone also. I have a friend here named Eileen. She has enjoyed your sharing. I love the paramitas. And your answer really, really gave me a lot of comfort. I did attend one of the lectures, and the guy is very charismatic and kind of good-looking or whatever, but that sense of deep discomfort, I forgot that I have de-invested in the science and all of this kind of rigmarole, rooming the that kind of, like, nothing set in stone. And
right.
Yeah, so that's so, and of course, you know what, today is a good day to die. I've lived with integrity, I've done my best to carry the message, and to be a sober, vegan, joyful person. Thank you very, very much. And I wanted to ask if it was maybe the park in Switzerland was the author. When I was in high school, I think I was in love with Eric von Daniken. I'm not sure how to say his name.
Eric von Daniken, thanks. Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, that's it. That's the place. Yep. That's it.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks okay. For... his name was kind of on the tip of my tongue, but I couldn't quite get it. Yeah, Eric von Daniken. Yeah, it's a very interesting place. If you're ever in Switzerland, outside of Bern, there's really an amazing... I just loved it. It was so interesting. They had all these unexplained mysteries of planet Earth and so forth, and they had really very good exhibits on each one. And I think that, you know, it's good to be aware that there's so many things that we have not explained at all.
Yes. Yes.
Good. Thanks. Anything else, or is that it?
Just thank you. Thank you very much. And, oh, Paul, that's very exciting. That's very exciting. How wonderful that he would reach out to you. I think that's a lovely idea.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so thank you. Yes, please mute me and Eileen, unless you want to say hi.
Hello.
Hi, Eileen. Thanks for joining us on the call.
You're a very gentle manner. I denote a lot of love.
Okay, good. Well, thank you. Thanks very much, and thanks for caring for animals and for everyone.
Yes, sir.
That's great. All right. Good.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Great. All righty. Thanks. Thanks, Grace. Thanks, Eileen, for calling in. Okay. Anyone else? There was somebody else that had raised their hand, and my system dropped you somehow, whoever you were. I don't know who you were, but you disappeared from my little queue here. So I apologize. I'm not sure what happened. But, I just suddenly made the connection. I think it was Deborah, there's a woman named Deborah who's a WorldPeace facilitator. And I remember now she told me, she asked me a question. And she wanted me to answer the question if I could before 7 o'clock. I just realized it's just Pacific time, which is now, it's now 7:02. And I think she had to maybe leave the call because she had another obligation. But I'll go ahead and just respond to it, and she can listen to the recording. And it may be helpful to you all, too. But I kind of wish I had gotten to it sooner because that might have been better. But anyway, the question is something, maybe we all have something similar to these kinds of things. But her question was, let's see here, I've got it. I could have sworn I had it right here. She was, she's having a birthday party with her relatives. And they are not vegans. And she was wondering what's the best way to respond to her, to them. Because she's going to be throwing a birthday celebration for these people, and they're non-vegans, and she's a vegan, and so she's going to, send this invitation out. And so she wrote, by the time we celebrate, this is what she wrote to her adult children. By the time we celebrate, you will all have celebrated how you choose with your families and friends. As the host of this event, it would be my pleasure to provide an array of delicious and healthy plant-based food. And then she talks about how she's going to be going to Zest Kitchen, and the day before, I guess, in Sacramento, and listening to a lecture by the author of the World Peace Diet. I'll be there. Actually, I'll be in Sacramento, so I'll be right where she lives, I guess, the day before. And what she's saying in her letter to her non-vegan children is that she'll pick up some delicious food for them at this restaurant, and to let her know what she thinks, what they would like. So she's wondering if this is the right way to approach it. And then also she writes, if this doesn't sound acceptable, please call me so we can work out something that does. So she's kind of, I guess, worried that they're going to be upset that she's telling them they can't have meat or whatever. So she sent me an email actually just a couple of minutes ago and said that she got insight from what I already said on how to deal with the situation. So that's good to hear. I would personally, the only thing that came to me when I saw this whole thing was I was thinking, why is it really a good idea? I mean, is it really a good idea to say it would be my pleasure to provide an array of delicious and healthy plant-based food? I mean, why not just say it's my pleasure to provide the food? That's it. I mean, you have to say healthy and delicious plant-based food. I mean, if I say I'm going to provide healthy and delicious food, I'm already I mean, if somebody told me that, I'd already be, like, worried that they're trying to poison me or something. Because why are they saying it's healthy and delicious? I mean, of course it's healthy and delicious. You wouldn't serve them unhealthy, lousy food. So, I mean, so I think just to say you're going to provide the food and you know, don't make a big deal about it, really. Because I think a lot of times, especially nowadays, the vegan food it's become so like a cutting edge of cuisines that we don't have to make excuses about it. It's amazingly delicious. It's fantastic. And to be happy that, you know, we can have some good food together. It's food that everybody likes, everybody can eat. And so anyway, that's my thought, not to set it up so that people are expecting them to argue with us. That's what I would think. But if anybody has any, if you have any thoughts for Deborah, feel free to press *6 and let us know. So it's now about 7:07. We only have another maybe 15 minutes or so, and I did want to have a chance, if possible, to, like I say, to respond to any comments or questions that any of you may have that I haven't addressed at this point. So please press *6 if you'd like to share anything. I know there are a few of you on the call, because I can see your names, that have been active over the last month with things that have been happening in Charlottesville and things that are just happening in general. One thing I wanted to mention quickly, actually since I'm thinking of it, is there's been a lot of discussion that continues, and this is a huge thing, but Judy comments on that. I can see Judy's here. Maybe, Judy, if you want to say anything about this. Judy was at the National Animal Rights Conference that just took place in Washington, D.C., and was, you know, she and I talked for quite a while on the phone, and she was telling me that there was as we all know, probably, if we're involved in the movement, a lot of controversy, I guess is the word, between people or groups that are more interested in welfare approaches, cage-free eggs and things, and people who are pushing more for vegan education solely and liberation of animals. And so one thing that's sort of emerged that's kind of interesting, I think, is the role of Vox Media. I just think this is – I personally just sort of made these connections myself. I'm not sure if anyone else has made them, but Vox Media, because is a huge media company, and they have been apparently funded by groups that are have other interests than vegan interests. Vox Media was funded by Excel, is a venture startup fund with literally hundreds of millions of dollars, and they basically have funded and provided the money for Vox Media to take off. And I thought it was so interesting, because when I heard Matt Ball's interview, it's kind of a famous interview where, it's a YouTube video. Matt Ball is the founder of a vegan outreach. You know, you'd think he'd be a vegan. And he is somewhat of a vegan, but he made this video saying that if you're going to eat meat, you should eat cows, don't eat chickens. And that, you know, veganism is really not working very well. And a lot of people, everybody knows angry vegans. And, you know, basically saying we should stop trying to get people to go vegan and try to get them to eat more cows and eat less chickens. And And he said, when he was interviewed by Carolyn Bailey on the vegan, what's it called, the program that she puts on, that the interview that he had with, he said Vox News, they were behind this whole thing. Right? I mean, you know, Vox Media, excuse me, VOX, Vox and Victor OX. Vox Media was behind the whole thing, that he did something like 2 hours camera time with them in this interview, and then he had to sign a waiver that he would have no rights over anything that was, you know, over the final product. And then they edited it down to like 3 minutes or 3.5 minutes, and then they with their marketing power put it up on YouTube and promoted the heck out of it to the point where there's over 1 million views. You know, there would never be 1 million views, but except for Vox Media. And so it was kind of like they supercharged this message of eat more cows. That was by Vox Media. And I noticed also Vox Media has been behind two other big things. One was this attack on What the Health, the movie by Kip Anderson, who's one of our Ropey Site facilitators. It's a great film, really not only showing the health benefits of veganism and the devastating effects of the animal products for our health, but also the collusion between the Heart Association, the Cancer Society, the Diabetes Foundation, and so forth, and Susan G. Komen Foundation, and the big industries, and how they work together to keep people eating meat and dairy products and eggs. Anyway, it's a great film. And so there was this Vox Media attacked the film so viciously and vigorously. And then also Vox Media paid for and praised, you know, this whole article praising the Humane League as one of America's most important animal rights groups. You know, I mean, no one would ever call the Humane League an animal rights group. It's got nothing to do with animal rights. It's a welfare group. It's always been a welfare group. And then there's this ACE, Animal Charity Evaluators, which Judy was saying has had a table at the Animal Rights Conference. And Nick Cooney, who's the founder of, there's this apparent corruption. I won't go into the whole thing, but Nick Cooney is the founder of Humane League. Also, he's a vice president of Mercy for Animals, and also he's an officer also with the Good Food Project. And these three, plus one other one, which is Animal Equality, which also has a strong ties with Nick Cooney, are the four groups that this Animal Charity Evaluators recommends everyone gives money to. And he's involved with them, too. He's on their board. So it's like, come on. I mean, how can – this is like the most blatant corruption you can imagine. And yet this is what's going on. You know, if they're recommending give money to my groups, and he's created his own thing to even push that in a – sort of this whole culture, and also this Open Philanthropy Project, which has given $2.5 million, $1 million to Humane League, $1 million to Mercy for Animals, and $500,000 to the Humane Society to promote cage-free eggs. You know, so when you're getting all this money to do work that's not promoting veganism, but actually promoting people eating eggs, This corruption. So I think this is kind of what we're dealing with. And just to be aware, I don't go out of my way to make us think about this, but I just think it's very interesting that Vox Media, Open Philanthropy Project, Excel, which is the one that provided the money for them, and the Excel's founder, Jim Breyer, was on the board of Walmart, and is also... you know, Excel gets a lot of money, and it's deeply in bed with the big pharmaceutical industries and health insurance industry. And, you know, they don't want people going vegan. And Walmart's planning, apparently, on building a huge dairy processing plant in Indiana. And they want people to eat more cows, obviously. They don't want people to eat less cows. You know, the cow industry has been declining. The dairy industry's been declining. The meat and the beef industry's been declining. And so here's Matt Ball, founder of Vegan Outreach, you know, proclaiming that we should eat more cows. I mean, I really, and then these but the shadow is behind. Anyway, I don't want to draw definite conclusions because, as I said earlier, things are not as they seem, and so maybe there's other things going on, but I think we have to be very, that's why I love, you know, the World Peace Diet approach. Basically, is we just, it's grassroots oriented. We focus mainly on our own practice and then bringing the message as best we can, with using our creativity, and that may be doing big things like Sandra Higgins with her whole, you know, with this billboard campaign, or Kip with his movies. But who knows what's big? You know, maybe just the kind of thing where someone just has a local meetup group. That's big too. Or Lily with her beautiful Sunday night Wopieside Sunday call. I mean, there's so many different things that we can do, and I think in many ways, grassroots activism is the heart and soul of any liberation movement. And when we start getting into large organizations, we start having this kind of corruption, the kinds of millions of dollars that are just easy to buy influence and bring us off the tracks there, more or less. So I have, you know, more information about that if you want to look at it on the resources for this month. All right, so Judy, go ahead. Sorry, I'm kind of rambling on here.
Hi, Will.
Hi.
it's Judy. Yeah, everything you said was going on at the conference. It wasn't, I didn't see any actual violence or huge arguments, although I could have
seen
something. it was all fairly professionally done and a lot of little innuendos in the speeches, but...
Mm-hmm.
But I did love some things that several people said. Bob Leonard said, "Our veganism unites us." There were number of people who said really strong things, not mean-spirited, but strong about animal rights, and then others that would not say the word rights. And we're clearly talking about welfare. And I told you when we were talking earlier about Michael Budke, something he said that really stuck with me, that some of the listeners don't know, he is co-founder of Stop Animal Exploitation Now, and they focus on animal experimentation.
Anti-vivisection, yeah.
Right. And he said, we can't make vivisection humane. There's no way to do that. You either stop it or you continue to be cruel. And he said, I need you guys to get out there and not use the word humane eggs, humane milk, etc., because he said that just gives the animal experimenters a way to say, well, you think it's okay to have humane meat, we're going to make animal experimentation humane. And so he tied those together in a way I hadn't heard him talk about before and was obviously addressing this issue.
Right.
And then a woman, I'll talk about, Lauren Gazzola, who was one of the Shack 7 who now works for the Center for Constitutional Rights, she says we have to shift from welfare to rights in order to get to the root of the problem, which is speciesism. So I thought that was a really good statement. So there were, I would say, of the main speakers, the plenary speakers, it would seem to kind of go back and forth almost like a tennis match. But I really loved what you said earlier in your talk, Will, about going beyond dualism. And we really kind of walk a fine line, a razor's edge in a way, as we work on our own spirits and attempt to live beyond dualism and yet dealing every day with this kind of dualism of animal suffering, but also now
what seems to be becoming a bigger issue in the animal rights movement is all this money that's pouring in to the welfare side. So, but you know, I totally agree with you. It's grassroots. That's where it's at. And people with good hearts that really care, we're the ones that are really going to help this shift happen. And if we get too distracted by all this conflict, I think it will take away from our energy and our focus.
Right, exactly.
I think we need to know that it's happening
right.
and know about the language that's being used and all that.
Right, right.
But not be overly distracted by it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's really that's a beautiful point, you know, because otherwise we ended up all our energy goes into fooling around with that, and we're not actually doing the activism that we could be doing.
Yeah, actually fighting with each other.
Yeah, which, exactly.
Which
yeah.
If there is an invasion of big ag and big pharma going on here, that's exactly what they would want.
They would want us to do that, right? So it's important for us to just keep. Yeah, going out there and sharing the message, right.
Yeah, and one of our jobs, I think, is to demonstrate a whole new way of living, a non-dual way of living in harmony and beyond speciesism and beyond all the isms.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's not easy, as you've pointed out, when we've all been brought up in this paradigm that we have of domination. But that's one of our jobs.
Right. Yeah, we've internalized it.
Yeah, and you're such a big help in helping us learn how to do that.
Thanks. Well, thank you. Thanks for the report from the AR conference, a little mini report, but those are some two great examples of things you can learn and remember. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're almost at. Thanks so much, Judy. It's
okay,
great to
you're
hear
welcome.
Your voice.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye. And I'd love to just say one other thing and then maybe see if we could hear just briefly from Lily how it's going with her Wokitai Sunday. I wanted to mention before I unmute Lily that if anyone's interested in being a volunteer, to help me actually with the World Peace Diet page, worldpeacediet.com page, that would be great. It's helpful if you have a little bit of understanding about computer, HTML, a little bit. I mean, not even much, but just a little bit about websites. It would be nice to have someone who can just do the Veg Inspiration for the day, which is probably only a couple hours a month at the most, I would say, of time. And then it would be nice to have someone who knows a little bit more about web design things to help me out from time to time. So if you have any interest in that or can help out, just let me know. There's nothing really pressing, but I could use a little help. We're leaving, going out of the country for 2 months. And sometimes it's hard to do things from, you know, so it's nice to have someone who can help out. So if you can send me an email if you're at all interested in helping out in any way, that would be great. And we still actually would like to have someone to help with Circle of Compassion. And we have funds for that. I mean, we have we can pay someone to help out with. We want to kind of help the Circle of Compassion grow, reach more people. So if you want to help out with that, you know, let me know about that too. All right. So Lily, if you're there, and I just thought it would be nice to hear briefly from you, if you don't mind.
Hey,
are you there?
You surprised me. I'm having my beautiful vegan dinner. I've already said my prayer for Will and Madeline and and for all the animals. They're all one. This is the fourth year of doing World Peace Diet Sunday, and I just started it because I felt compelled to do something, and given where I live, it seemed like the best way to do what I can do. And so I don't worry about the outcome. At one point I said, well, if we don't get at least 100 people at every meeting, I'm gonna, you know, kind of back off from this because it looks like it's not going. And I've shifted. I don't do it because, you know, I'm looking for the numbers. New people come on just about every week. We have somebody new. But I've let go. You talked about letting go, you talked about the great chief saying, you know, today is a good day to die, and today is a good day to do the right thing. And I love that you said that Sunday is a day of service. I feel like the service that I provide provides for me.
Yes.
Because I have this beautiful group that are, whoever happens to be there, they're extremely, I talked to a woman today. She said, it's because of your World Peace Diet Sunday that I got what the health, and I'd never heard of it before, and it was mentioned on your study group, and that has helped me so much. And I'm going to use it as a tool of activism. So it's, you're right, it's totally grassroots. I just do it. You ask how it's going. I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not taking tabs anymore. I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing because it's the right thing to do for me in my particular circumstance with my capabilities. And
right.
I don't have a lot of technology backing me up. I do have this conference call, and I get to tell people about it. Every day I tell people, come to this. Even if you come once, you're going to hear something.
Right.
It's going to make a difference. And it really does. Each session makes a difference because, you know, we read it, a good portion of the World Peace Diet in it.
Right.
So, and I read it, and I make commentary, and I open it up for discussion. It's an hour well spent, and I use it as a tool of my personal activism.
Right. Well, thank you. I just wanted to remind everyone that if you know anyone who'd like to perhaps go a little more deeply into the World Peace Diet, or you yourself, every Sunday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time, this World Peace Diet Sunday, and it's reading the World Peace Diet now for the fourth time. And I think there's nothing like doing that in a group to really help build confidence and deeper understanding and to build the really to build a vegan community on a deep level. So just thanks for that, and we probably have to go now. It's been our time is up, but thanks so much for doing that. And just remind everyone, I'll remind everyone in the email I send out later on tonight of the phone number and so forth. But it's always at, if you're ever wondering, it's at worldpeacediet.com. Just go to our upcoming events, and it's right at the top of the page.
Great.
All right.
Thank
all
you.
Our best to you, Lily, and to Jim. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much. So, and there's so many of you who are doing great things with Facebook groups, having discussions, sharing ideas, bringing the light of vegan wisdom and compassion to our world, and in so many other ways. And I really am indebted to so many people. I know Mel and I are so grateful for all of the efforts that you are making and many other people are making as we travel and as we do our best to share the message as well. So next month we'll be doing the World Peace Diet Sunday. It'll be the third Sunday in September, of course, which is the 21st of September. Right around the equinox. And then, just to let everybody know, we're going to be leaving the country on October 8th, and I just can see no way, quite honestly, that we can do a third Thursday in October, and probably because we're going to be that entire time we're going to be in either India or Switzerland somewhere, and the time zone thing and everything is very difficult. So I'll keep you posted in some way. And then the following third, it will be in China, which is even more difficult because we don't have access in many cases to all the internet. And I don't have a phone either. So I don't have a phone in your view. So I think it's just not going to happen probably for 2 months, unfortunately. But we'll be back in the States in Maui, and the Big Island. Let's see, we'll probably be on Maui. Or we may be back in California for December. So anyway, so looks like we'll have next month, and then maybe we'll be off for a couple of months. But thank you all so much. We'll keep the spirit of questioning the official stories alive for this month. Also, the six paramitas. Remember that generosity and ethics and patience and zealous efforts and meditative awareness and wisdom and finally altogether service are really the foundation for not only healthy activist life but a healthy personal life, that our relationships become more harmonious, our inner heart and mind begin to deepen into a sense of being connected to the source of all life. And we can, I think, out of that awareness, authentically plant seeds that will blossom as beautiful fruits and trees in the garden of our shared life together. This is really the way forward, and there's really so much more we can talk about here, and I really appreciate all of you being on the call, and those of you who pressed star six and shared your questions and thoughts and so forth, thanks to you, and those of you who did not and who are listening and being the space, and those of you who listen later to the recording, remember we have all of these recorded, and they're up on the website. Later listening, if you want to listen later, if you miss something, or if you want to share with someone. So anyway, to all of you who are listening to this, I know that your actions and your thoughts and feelings are vital to the unfolding of our movement, too. So stay in touch. Much love to you all from Natalyn and from me. I was just very lucky to have for a little snack here a whole bowl of chopped peaches from our amazingly generous peach tree. We have a peach tree that really has studied Donna very, very well. She gave us so many peaches this year. And our fig tree, my gosh, I should send a photograph of our figs and peaches. We have figs and peaches. And these trees are just so beautiful. They don't charge, you know, they just give. And we save, you know, leave a few for the birds, but it's really wonderful. So thank you, wonderful, beautiful garden, and just to create our life as a garden and to help realize the beautiful technology. Like Lily, you know, she does everything out there with low tech, but really, I mean, solar panels and batteries is an appropriate technology, I think. It's great. So we'll end here with a short song, maybe it's just a short one. This will be Corona. It's very short. Enjoy, and much love to you all, and we'll look forward to being in touch with you again and sharing in September. Thanks so much.